Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures, and it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress that is trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. It's a great mattress at a very reasonable price point. Comes with a 20-year warranty. And a great deal for our listeners. Douglas is giving you a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That is douglas.ca/CanadaLand. Quick note before today's episode begins. A lot of you might be expecting coverage of yesterday's events in court around the Gomeshi case. Well, we're watching that very closely, and as we learned yesterday, the complainant in that case was Catherine Burrell, who is on the record as a close friend of mine. So this is a delicate aspect of the Gomeshi story for me to engage with. I'm watching the coverage closely. I'm figuring out whether or not I'm the right person to talk about it at all, or if we're going to put other people on that, and we should have some coverage for you in the days to come. Vincent McDermott and Cullen Bird, journalists with Fort McMurray Today. Fort McMurray evacuees?
Yeah, pretty much.
Sounds right.
Speaking to me from the offices of the Edmonton Journal.
Our new home.
Welcome to Canada Land Shortcuts.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Today we're just going to be talking about coverage of the fire. We're going to be talking about the domestic coverage and some of the debates around it and some of the things that people got wrong and things that people got right. And we're going to talk about the international coverage, and we're going to talk about some of the strange things that happened on social media that were helpful and maybe not so helpful. Thank you both for being here so much.
Thanks for having us.
This episode of Canada Land Shortcuts is brought to you by Bruce Charland, Philippe Doyon-Poulin, Katie Bristow, Duarte De Silva, Emmett Mello, David Alexander, Karen Suzuki, and Jonathan Wong. Jonathan, why did you decide to be awesome?
Because you guys got a great team, and your heart's in the right place.
Today's episode is also brought to you by ShipStation. So what is ShipStation? ShipStation is for this growing economy of people who are making things, real things, in real space with their real hands, but selling them through the internet. And this is a great way to ship them. When you are selling online, getting your orders out the door quickly can be tough, and that is why you need ShipStation. ShipStation is the fast and easy way to manage and ship your orders all from one place. Helps you get your orders out quickly and keep customers happy. Doesn't matter if you're selling things on eBay or Amazon or Shopify or Etsy or 65 other selling channels. It's all integrated. You can use ShipStation to create shipping labels that are compatible with Canada Post, UPS, FedEx. You will ship more in less time with the best rates available. And that is why ShipStation is the number one choice of online sellers. in North America. Don't wait. Go to ShipStation.ca. Before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage. Type in Canada Land. That's ShipStation.ca. Enter Canada Land. Today's episode is also brought to you by our initial launching original sponsor, FreshBooks.com. FreshBooks, of course, lets you create professional-looking invoices in seconds. You can accept credit card payment on your invoice. That's one of the reasons why FreshBooks clients tend to get paid like 4 to 5 days quicker than if you're just invoicing using Microsoft Word. You will know when your invoice has been viewed. You can create estimates and quotes with FreshBooks. You can send recurring invoices to your regular clients. There is effortless expense capture. I like the mobile app. I just take pictures of my receipt. I enter in the details about it, and then you just like round them all up and say, assign all of these expenses to your clients, and all of that expense work is done. You can throw out all those little pieces of paper that you've been making your wallet get fat. Check out FreshBooks.com. Try it out for free for 30 days. When you become a customer, tell them Canada Land sent you. You will be doing the show a favor. Thank you, FreshBooks. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's amazing the things that we tell ourselves to talk ourselves out of getting help. Anybody who's actually gotten help knows that the process of getting things off your chest, of taking your stressors, your problems, and just like not letting them be bottled up, working through just conveying them to somebody, half of the battle is just doing that. You unburden yourself. And you know what? If you have a real mental health professional, no, they don't have magic bullets or magic words that make it all go away. But often they can help you see things a little bit differently and guide you to strategies or tools or to a new perspective that actually does help. As the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Because you listen to this podcast, you get 10% off of your first month at BetterHelp.com/CanadaLand. That's BetterHelp.com/CanadaLand. This episode is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. We hear a lot about the opioid crisis. We talk a lot about the mental health crisis. These are serious problems. These problems affect us all. They've affected my life and my community. They're not intractable problems. I don't know what's going to solve them on a policy level, but day to day, helping people, that's what CAMH does. They do it on the ground when people need help, and they do it through research. The team at CAMH gave our team a tour of their facilities, and we were really just blown away by the incredible, heroic work that they're doing every day. They treat everyone with dignity, and their research is seeking and finding real solutions for everyone around the world. Help change mental health care forever. Your support will help CAMH build a future where no one is left behind. Donate at CAMH.ca/CanadaLand to help CAMH treat addiction and build hope.
We've seen lots of heart-stopping video of smoke and flames devouring the city of Fort McMurray this week.
Fire crews are doing their best to stop the flames, but they just keep spreading.
The estimate has not changed from 1,600 buildings destroyed, damaged.
The fire, now nicknamed the Beast, has already burned nearly 400,000 acres in Alberta. It has destroyed an entire town, forced nearly 90,000 people to evacuate in so doing.
Families have lost homes. Some neighborhoods were reduced to ash, but Fort McMurray is far from destroyed.
So there, I think we have a sense of just how contradictory some of the media reports were, and I think just some of the information was. Vincent, you tweeted that you just saw a media map of the fire, and you tweeted, "Looks like I am now homeless. Might as well keep reporting." Quite extraordinary that you, in the face of learning that your home had burned down, kept reporting, but that turned out not to be the case.
So it is within that red area of the map that was tweeted out, but it turns out there is quite a bit of heat and smoke damage to it, I've been told, but it's still standing and it's probably still going to be livable eventually. But for 72 hours, I truly and honestly did believe that it was gone.
What can we make of this? And we are certainly absolutely guilty of this here at Canada Land in those early hours when we were reporting on it and all we heard was these are the most terrible circumstances. This is going to be weeks. Then we heard months before the fire is going to be extinguished. We heard that it doubled in size, then quadrupled. We knew that every single person had been evacuated. We heard that a hospital was on fire. And then we saw the first images coming out of the Beacon Hill neighborhood that just looked like absolute post-nuclear devastation. And we went with the headline, Fort McMurray is gone. And that turned out to be a very unfortunate headline that I think we have to apologize for. I mean, it's certainly confusing from here. And then we hear now that 90% almost of buildings in Fort McMurray were spared and that the critical infrastructure looks like it's okay. In the fog of this fire, in the confusion, was it just those of us from afar who were so misled? Or you know, why did the exaggerated reports get out? And did it seem any clearer close up?
Social media is great, but also, I mean, I saw some of these rumors just from people on social media as well, and I have a feeling that's why it just got out of hand the way it did. I'm not blaming social media entirely on this, though. It's just, these things always seem to happen during breaking news of a crisis. Like, I remember during the shooting in Ottawa, I was seeing reports that there was a sniper on the roof of Parliament Hill, which, of course, turned out to be ludicrous.
Yeah, there was just a lack of information on all fronts, even among the evacuees. A lot of people saw the flames very close to their homes. And so, you know, some people thought that all of Abbasand was gone. No question, there's significant damage there, but there were significant structures and a number of homes saved there. So people got out with the information they had, and then for, you know, 24, 48 hours, they didn't have access to a whole lot more.
Personally, I can't imagine the rumors that would probably be spreading around and maybe even getting reported if it wasn't for the municipality's Twitter account, since they left their staff up in Fort McMurray. But I mean, after spending a few nights in these evacuation centers, I mean, when people found out I was with media, people would come up to me and they would be asking me all these things like, oh, is it true the hospital is gone? Is it true City Hall is gone? Or I heard half of Timberley is destroyed, that sort of thing.
You bring up the Wood Buffalo Twitter account. That was not messaging from a journalist. That was the municipality. But that became one of the most accurate sources of information and an incredible resource. And I mean, it's sort of what I noticed in your reporting, both of you, the disparity between what local news was focused on versus what national and international news was focused on. The big, incredible pictures was what I think national news reports were interested in. And the sense of, like, in a general sense, how big is it? Is it as big as Calgary? Is it bigger? Versus the sort of more functional reporting that you guys were putting out of just where people are supposed to go, how people can get resources or find out about their loved ones. And then we've got this municipality Twitter account. Can you tell me just a little bit about the Wood Buffalo Twitter account and the purpose it served during the worst of it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's funny because I looked up the tweet that they sent out exactly a week ago, and it was about garbage pickup. The thing is, the municipality, they left communication staff on the ground, and I mean, they have direct access to the firefighters doing reconnaissance of the area and of the fire. So basically, they have become kind of a local emergency broadcast system.
And is that manned by somebody who, like, stayed behind when everyone else left? Is that what you were saying?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
In the 24 hours after the evacuation and leading up to the evacuation, their comm staffers were just working 24/7. So, you know, Robin Smith, Jordan Redshaw, Brendan Prossy, Amy Harper, those are all the communication staffers that were working incredibly hard just to get information out. And I know for a fact that Jordan Redshaw stayed behind. He's still there. They all worked incredibly hard. And so we all owe them for that.
What do you make of the exaggerations? Do you say, hey, you know, we understand breaking news is often broken? Not just yourselves, but like amongst the evacuees, is there anger that we, and I have to include myself in this, and there's never been a story I've been more happy to have been wrong about. Is there anger that we were so quick to believe the most extreme versions of this story?
Just in terms of priorities, residents are most fixated on just getting back to their homes and providing for themselves right now. For sure, there's frustration in terms of receiving basic services and information, but so far I haven't noticed a backlash about, you know, we've heard this inaccurate information from news outlets and we're angry about it.
Vince, do you agree?
I noticed some anger in some of the evacuation centers. I mean, people were just saying the media in general, they weren't really naming any outlets, but I think they're already hearing a million rumors in these evacuation centers, and then they're just really looking for information, and they don't know what to believe.
And the anger was just about how some of the information was wrong, and they thought that things had been worse than they actually were?
Yeah. Myself included. I mean, yeah, myself included. Now it's pointed out, yeah, I was kind of pissed off when I found out that, turns out, my home is not destroyed. I believe that map, it was done with infrared, so it showed hot areas, but I mean, like, the place where I live, it's pretty deep within that red area, so I remember looking at this map going, well, I'm homeless.
Yeah.
But I am kind of pissed off about it now.
Who put that map out, that erroneous map?
I think it was NASA, actually.
Oh, those fuckers at NASA. It's interesting, though. I mean, it just shows you how wrong common sense can be. I mean, the images are of this inferno. The images of the highways were just insane, and the tree line, and then you hear that it's getting worse and worse and worse. My mind goes, okay, it's hot, it's dry, the fire's getting bigger, nothing stands a chance. Like, eventually fire eats everything, and that just shows how little I know about a wildfire, because it seems incredible how it just completely scorched one street and then completely ignored the next.
Oh, it wasn't just ignoring it. It was because there were firefighters and crews on the ground working very hard to divert the flames. The other day, I was speaking to a city councilor, Lance Boussier, and his home was one of the only homes that burned in the downtown area. So it's incredibly unfortunate. His home of 20 years is gone. But firefighters worked quickly in that situation and made sure that the flames didn't spread to the rest of the neighborhood. And that neighborhood was right across from the hospital. So that's just an example.
I saw a lot of anger, not necessarily towards just the press thinking that it was a worse fire than the devastation was worse than it turned out to be, but specific anger towards mostly like American media coverage. When the New York Times headline ran, "Wildfires have consumed swaths of a Canadian town that had drawn people with fat paychecks." The headline kind of makes this connection between the high pay that made Fort McMurray such a destination for workers and the fires. Warren Kinsella, who's quick to say such things, said this headline was written by an asshole. That got some play. And then in Slate, Eric Holthaus, he wrote about the response to his coverage because he wrote stories that were very much about the relationship between climate change and wildfires, you know, with reference to this fire in Fort McMurray. And he became a trending topic in Canada. And he writes about how, you know, he got a lot of hate mail calling this a dick move, disgusting, people warning him that karma will not be kind for these things that he wrote. He was defiant about that. Did you guys have a chance to read what the rest of the world was saying about this fire?
Yeah, I did. The backlash truly didn't surprise me, not because it may be interpreted as insensitive, but the thing about Fort McMurray is it can be a town that's very defensive towards outside media. I mean, for the past 10 years, you have all these journalists who come up to write about how the tar sands are terrible and how it's destroying this town. And the people in Fort McMurray, they just don't like those kind of articles. I mean, when I first came to McMurray, the British version of GQ had just put out an article called No Country for Young Men. And it was basically about the white trash culture of Fort Mac. What I tell people is, the stories you hear about Fort McMurray, they're 100% completely true for certain segments of the population that you would see in a young mining town. But there's also people there who have decided to make it home.
What's the breakdown? Like, how many people were born in Fort McMurray who live there?
The population is a little difficult because there's this, they call it the shadow population. It's the people who fly in and fly out and, like, their home base remains in Newfoundland or Nova Scotia or Ontario. Colin, you're the municipal reporter.
The latest municipal census didn't really give a breakdown of ethnicity or main languages, etc. They're leaving that to the federal long-form census. And you know what? That's probably going to be compromised a bit, too, because of the fire in terms of the response rate.
Right, of course.
But there are a number of families in Fort McMurray that are in prominent life, and they've lived in Fort McMurray for generations. People say Fort McMurray is very diverse, and that's very true. There are people from all over the world and from all different cultures and backgrounds. Even the more recent arrivals who have come from somewhere else have usually been there at least 8 to 10 years. And and they've had time to build a life and start a family or move their family to Fort McMurray. So even if they weren't born and raised there, they definitely have connections to the city that, you know, if they lost their homes and those physical connections, it's going to be very hard on them.
Yeah, I mean, not to discount from any of the human tragedy of this or the trauma, it is a strange city. I kind of think about this, and I think about New Orleans. It's almost the opposite, a place that has steeped in history, generations and generations of people going back to the beginning of the country in the United States. And really, like, the problem is that there's no viable industry, and people are drawn to come back and rebuild. Whereas Fort McMurray, people largely came there to make money, which is fine. That's how human populations have, you know, found themselves in urban centers for a very long time. But some people had roots in Fort McMurray. Many, many did not. And there is that shadow population, that large transient population. You know, you have to imagine that some people are just going to go and find work elsewhere. Those early thoughts that, like, wow, I don't know if they're going to be able to recover from this, that was based on, I think, a conception of, like, if the critical infrastructure is going to take years to rebuild, how many people are going to really wait it out? But now that it looks like it might not be such an endeavor, I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, the neighborhoods that were completely destroyed are some of Fort McMurray's oldest. So a lot of the people in those neighborhoods, they were born and raised in Fort McMurray, or they had deep roots. So, I mean, the resettlement plan hasn't come out, so I have no idea what's going to happen to them. But I can't imagine that, like, some people who maybe didn't even lose their homes, but maybe lost their jobs or just are traumatized by it, have decided to just go fuck it and leave.
It is true that a lot of people in Fort McMurray, or at least the people Fort McMurray are known for, have lucrative jobs in the oil sands industry. However, there are a number of people who work in the service industry in Fort McMurray, taxi drivers, retail workers, restaurant workers, etc., who are struggling even before the fire. So
yeah,
if we're looking for people who might leave, it would be maybe those people who were already struggling financially and perhaps have now also lost their homes. I wouldn't be surprised if they decide, you know, like, that was the final straw. For the people who still have lucrative jobs, I can imagine them wanting to come back, you know, claim their insurance money and try and rebuild and find a new place to live in the same community.
You know, I hate to be that guy. However, the local economy was struggling, and now there's this reason for all these construction companies now to show up and do something. I mean, a few of my friends, including some of my roommates, worked in the construction industry, and they were getting seriously worried about whether or not they were going to get contracts this spring. And there are some economic opportunities for this.
Yeah. Let me be that guy and ask a very uncomfortable question. Putting aside all of this bullshit, finger-wagging karma, this, and, you know, it's the height of hypocrisy to me, because we in the cities, of course, consume the product that is derived in Fort McMurray. So if there's karma, then we better watch out here. But aside from that completely, there is a growing movement in this country for divesting from natural resources, maybe expressed in the most extreme way by the LEAP manifesto, but also the current government has said, you know, ingenuity, innovation, not resources. Let's, you know, move towards this other thing. So divestment is sort of in the air, along with the time when oil is not as lucrative a business as it used to be. So do you fear, and do the people that you are talking to and the other evacuees fear, that this will be seized upon as a reason to not reinvest in Fort McMurray and to sort of pivot where the resources are placed?
I haven't really heard those when I've been speaking with evacuees. However, you know, I have heard that quite a few people have realized that now is an opportunity to kind of rethink Fort McMurray's role in the country. I know that that conversation was already starting to happen now that it's become more and more apparent that even energy companies themselves are starting to invest in renewable energies. But I haven't really heard that conversation from evacuees. Right now, what they're thinking is, when am I going to go home and where am I going to live in the meantime? I mean, I'm sure it'll happen soon. Again, like, a lot of people were starting to think about renewable energies and how Fort McMurray can get in on that, or if it's even possible for Fort McMurray to get in on that. But there always will be a market for petroleum this century, I'm sure. It'll be a smaller market, I'm sure. However, there will always be that desire for it.
What did you guys learn about your jobs during this crisis?
Well, I guess we learned that we really love our jobs. I mean, we decided it was time to leave the office when the community of waterways was being evacuated, and that's maybe about a block or two away from our office. And we decided, like I said before, we'll regroup in Anzac. Our top priority when we got there was, okay, how do we keep covering? Not, okay, let's go get a hotel in Calgary and wait this out. But in terms of what was happening, I guess it was very important that, well, the majority of our readers were probably behind the wheel, and that once you get south of McMurray, the reception is pretty bad. However, it was important that we let people outside of McMurray, especially people with family and friends in the city, know exactly what was happening. I mean, filing a story from the side of a gas station with 1,000 other people waiting for gas was definitely interesting.
Yeah, I would say that definitely one of the pressures that I felt was just that we were the media sources with the most local information, us and the other local radio stations. So myself and Vince and our sports reporter, Rob Murray, were all just trying to get out as much of that information as we could in the early hours. And then even after more media outlets started to cover it, I still felt that onus to really find out what would be important to the residents of Fort McMurray, and also just try and inform people outside of Fort McMurray what's truly important and what's at risk in the fire. We talked about the First Nations communities and how they were being affected by it, and there were news outlets that started to pick up on that story, but we knew how important it was to tell people just how those smaller communities that not many people know about were faring because of the evacuation.
Yeah, you could sort of be like Sherpas for the parachuted in journalists and tell them what's important and who's who and what's what. And
I did get a couple of phone calls from journalists looking for that, but
I had to stop responding. It became too overwhelming when I got reporters from two newspapers in Rio wanting comment.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, okay, guys, I got to keep going.
And are you going to keep going? Is there word from Post Media on if Fort McMurray Today is going to keep publishing? I don't even know how and where and how that would work. Is it a going concern?
Well, our office survived, and we are publishing out of a printing press in Leduc, just south of Edmonton, and it's being distributed to evacuation centers in Lac-La-Biche, St. Paul, the arena in Edmonton, and we're trying to get it out to some campuses where a lot of evacuees are staying.
That's it. You've solved print media. If all the readers are just concentrated in five or six different evacuation centers, then distribution gets a lot cheaper.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, it does. And we're also, of course, maintaining our website. The advantage of a small newsroom is that we're all trained in how to handle the back end of putting our own articles online and through social media, etc. So we're able to continue that even out of the Edmonton Journal office.
That was your Canada Land Shortcuts. I hope you enjoyed it. You can email me, always, at jesse@canadalandshow.com. I read all of your emails, and I respond when I can. We are on Twitter, @CanadaLand. Cullen and Vincent had to go. They're on deadline, but you can reach them both on Twitter. Cullen Bird is @CullenBird. That's C-U-L-L-E-N, Bird. And Vincent McDermott is on Twitter, @Vince, M-C-D-E-R-M-O-T-T. And they both write for Fort Mac Today. Our website is canadalandshow.com. Our crowdfunding site is at patreon.com/CanadaLand. The next episode of Canada Land will be up on Monday. The next episode of Canada Land Commons will be up on Tuesday. I make this show with Kevin Sexton, the guy who puts together the syndicated version of Canada Land for community and campus radio stations across this country is Russell Gregg. If you like what we do, please support us. Hey, is there anything we didn't talk about that you were hoping we might?
If there's one thing to mention, like, there have been a couple of people that have just talked about, like, our bravery in taking, like, you talked about on your show in terms of, like, our bravery in taking pictures and video of the flames. Just one thing that might not have been apparent, we were actually just trying to get the hell out of town. Like, the flames were just that close to us. So, like, of course, we were trying to report as we left, but it was dangerous enough that we just wanted to get out of there. And there were hundreds of people making that same trip at the same time as us, just in case anyone thinks that I want to be a war correspondent or something.
Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures. And it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.